In this episode, AADL talks to Susan Pauley, a former executive director of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival. Susan talked about the early years of the festival when Eugene and Sadie Power were a strong presence, the many roles she played, and the shifts in programming emphasis over the years. She also shared with us her reminiscence of personal encounters and backstage stories of such entertainment greats as Tony Bennett and Mel Torme. The Ann Arbor Summer Festival celebrates its 30th season in 2013. For more information about the Ann Arbor Summer Festival, go to a2sf.org.
Susan, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your relation to the Summer Festival?
Well, I came to Ann Arbor as an adopted daughter. I was from Berkeley, California, and I worked in San Francisco. And one day I decided I needed to go to graduate school, and I also needed to find myself in a community where I could really embrace it and fully, you know, engage. So I came to Ann Arbor, finished my graduate degree in 84, and I did a series of work with not-for-profits and found myself at the Ann Arbor Summer Festival in 1987. And I had the good fortune to be there through those years until 1993. So I was there for a fair amount of time to see the program evolve.
Now, when you first became involved with the Ann Arbor Summer Festival, how did you find out about the Summer Festival?
Well, like everyone, I was following what was happening. Mr. Gene Power had this beautiful building, and he and Gail Rector, Bob Alexander, and others that were seminal to the beginning of the festival had thought to create activities in this beautiful theater because it was sitting somewhat unused in the summertime. I had, as one of my many arts jobs, worked for about 6 months at the Marcel Marceau World Center for Mime, which was here in Ann Arbor in an instant, and then it disappeared. Mr. Power had become friends with Tom Monahan, and with his friendship also with Gail Rector at the Musical Society, Marcel Marceau had come to Ann Arbor on many occasions, and he looked to create a new mime center here in Ann Arbor. It was through that I came to know Mr. Power, his assistant, Margaret Macialis, and others with the festival. And when I learned that there was a position at the festival, I sought and was grateful. I received an opportunity to work as the marketing director for the summer festival.
So what do you do as a marketing director?
Well, when I started, the programming was much more classical in nature. Mr. Power had envisioned that the Spoleto Festival in Italy and the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland could be inspiration for what he was looking to create here in Ann Arbor. And much of the program had its roots also in what was then the May Festival at the Musical Society. So much of my marketing had a fairly traditional form to it, where I let people know about the programs, try to convey as much as I could about what was coming. And at that point, much of our work was creating opportunities for people to sign on as many as 7 or 10 programs out of a 3-week period. So I was selling, in essence, subscriptions for a very condensed period of time for some really remarkable programming. At the time, again, the programming kind of dictated my kind of marketing, which was very, very traditional, I think.
And when things shifted for you in the organization, maybe you could describe your transition to some of your other leadership roles at the organization over time.
Well, I was with the festival for a few years, and I worked for the absolutely remarkable Alan Brown. Alan Brown was young. The board took a chance on him, and he showed that they were absolutely right. He was innovative, creative, entrepreneurial. He was someone who brought some of the best ideas, I think. I'll give you an example. I think everyone liked to claim top of the park. Well, the story I heard was actually it was Alan Brown looking for an activity at the Breakpoint to sort of create an opportunity to get people out of the theater. He created the refreshments outside, and then after when the show was over, it was his idea to paint the elevator tower on top of the parking garage. Alan had absolute belief that the arts had fun and joy to him. So I started for those 3 years with Alan. With everything, everything was available to us, and particularly because of the generosity of the Powers, their belief in this festival was so strong that at least for the first few years that I was there, any time the end of the season came around, and if ticket sales and sponsorships weren't strong enough, and I hope I'm not revealing too much because I know he was a private man, but Mr. Power would write the check to make up the difference. There was never a point when the festival was truly endangered because Mr. Power so believed in it, he was going to make sure it happened. Well, Alan Brown, as remarkable and as capable as he is, he left us to go out east. He's still doing work as an arts administrator. And we were somewhat shocked, I think, by his departure because, of course, Alan did such a great job. And I got a phone call from someone who's a Detroit news writer, and he was talking about the program. And this was in the fall, so it was well before programming had happened. And he said, so why aren't you applying for it? Why don't you become the director? And I had never at that point been a director of anything. And I thought, boy, that would be something, wouldn't it, me being the director? But I let the board know that I'd be very happy to serve as the interim director till they could do their search and find the right person. Well, my interimship became a permanent directorship. I learned on the fly how to program. I learned on the fly really how to do what I needed to manage staff. I learned how to do development work. And I think in most ways I had to learn to not be Alan Brown but to be myself and to direct a festival with my own mark on it. So it was a great opportunity that I was given.
Now tell us some of the marks that you made.
Well, I don't know if they were lasting marks, but I'd like to think that they were contributing elements. The first thing was, under my reign of terror, as I like to think of it, we stabilized the budget. We had grown very reliant on Mr. Power, and I thought it was really important that if this was to be a sustainable program, we had to stand on our own 2 feet. And I was very proud that when I left in 93, we had money in the bank, which is something we'd never had before. So I'd like to think that at least in some small part, I helped us to get to that. I also think that we helped ourselves to really move to the next step in terms of what the program mix was. My own background is not as an arts administrator, you know, deep as an artist myself, but someone who loves music. I love dance. I love theater. So I would ask everyone I could think of, people whose talent and taste that I respected, what do you think, and how about, and what if? And I give you a good example. One of my friends is Steve Bergman, who owns School Kids Record. And I'd hang out at School Kids like we all did, and I'd say, who should we be bringing? What should we be thinking about? Who's hot? Who's not? My friendship with Jim Fleming, who's just an outstanding agency, he brought some of the most remarkable programming, and it was because I had worked with Jim in the past. I knew I could trust him. His taste was impeccable. So it was with these extraordinary people lending their suggestions, I think the programming mix really loosened up. I think we got to a more of a sense of balance that I think today we still see. Many of the elements that were maybe not in place when I started. So I'd like to think that we helped to get there. I also like to think that in some ways we broadened the festival. It didn't eventually get us to Ingalls Mall as it is today, but I outreached to the Michigan Theater, to the Carytown Concert House, to the Arc. I thought it really important that if it was an Ann Arbor festival, it should feel like it's part of Ann Arbor and there should be pieces of it off and away from Power Center. So to some small extent, we started to bridge the gap between the festival and the rest of the community. And that was exciting to see it then. I mean, to see what Rob and others have done, it's really done a wonderful job of really becoming embedded in the DNA of Ann Arbor.
I wonder if you have some thoughts about how the festival historically either interacted with or responded to the community and how you interpret that or see that happening today. Sort of if there's great difference or if it's very similar, and then maybe in parallel, the same question around university interaction.
Well, to begin, I think that one of the greatest parts of the vision that Gene Power brought to the festival, that I think is still the legacy of the festival, is that it is a true partnership of the University of Michigan and the community, the city of Ann Arbor. His vision was to see this bridge, and in so many ways that describes what I think is remarkable about our town. And though it's easy, and I think in some cases sometimes too easy, to point to differences between the university and the community, I think we are at our best when we're working together. So from the beginning, that was one of its strengths, and we relied on unbelievably kind and generous people within the university to help with things like facilities, help us with office space, help us in just policing. I mean, you name it, they were there. But so too the city and the community responded very generously, and donations from the beginning were very strong. Their support for tickets were very strong. Sponsorship, the corporate community was always there. So in so many ways, it's the best of us. I think in so many ways we can look to it and say, if we can do this, why can't we do more? So that hasn't changed. I think that's still there. As I said, the program mix was changing while I was there. And in some ways, it also was shifting from its initial start where we had an artistic director, Mr. Gail Rector, and others really served in that way. I think Alan Brown was much more of an artistic director. The programming has become, I think, in so many ways more reflective of Ann Arbor as it is. We are smart, we're literate, we read our New York Times, we are going to see concerts, we're doing things. And I think that certainly the current staff at the Summer Festival have done a remarkable job. I really think nailing who Ann Arbor is and who we are today, not who we like to think people think we are, but who we are actually. And it's rare that I think that a program isn't absolutely just the smartest choice possible. And I think that's gotten better. That wasn't always the case. I think I had a few shows that I could have done better. And I look today and I think, boy, they nail it. They really know our community. So I don't know that isn't something to be congratulated with current staff. They really do a great job.
Do you see that this festival had drawn from the Southeast Michigan?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Area?
Some of the most remarkable performers that any of us will ever see are performing in these incredibly intimate spaces like Power Center. I have, from the time I was there and since then, heard people chatting, and I know they're coming from all over the place. I mean, you're going to be seeing some of these names. Just this year alone, we have Garrison Keillor coming. There are going to be people coming in from Ohio, from all over Southeast Michigan. They're going to want to see him in person because then they can say, I heard him, I saw him, I was a part of that audience. That was my show, and I was there. So I know we're drawing people. I also know that beyond that, the impact downtown is phenomenal. Now that I'm in my current role running the Ann Arbor Downtown Development Authority, I hear from the businesses. The impact of a summer festival season is strong, and it's in many ways helping us to keep our wonderful independent restaurants and shops going in the summer. When the U of M is more out of season than in season, the concerts draw a large audience that are then eating at our wonderful restaurants, shopping in our wonderful shops, and that's typically out-of-towners who are making that effort. So I think it's an impact of all sorts that benefit all of us.
Yeah, and thankfully we actually do have more of those statistics than ever before because In current day we have this crazy thing called Google Analytics. So we can actually see where people are from spending time on our website, even if they go to the free events outdoors and we're not tracking information about where they're from if they're buying a ticket for indoors. We have both of those metrics. So we are seeing an incredible amount of activity of people who are coming from far beyond Southeast Michigan, many states all over the U.S. actually. So that's actually really great, but we'll touch on that on another podcast. So your work to expand the reach during your administration, I think, is truly carried on.
Well, it's exciting to see. I mean, I'm so proud. As I said, I'm an adopted daughter of Ann Arbor. I chose to live here. I just think this is a wonderful community. And to see an event like this grow, it just does me so good. I just feel so good about it because I'm hoping others will discover this remarkable community that we live in and enjoy a summer evening outside or inside in a venue. Those are the memories that we all carry with us.
What comes to mind, Susan, for you as one of the tougher challenges during your tenure with the festival? Maybe something you could wrap your hands around in one administrational year or maybe multiple years of challenge?
I think that my first year was the toughest, and it was because we were shifting our financial base. We were trying to no longer look to Mr. Power to help us. We had to that point been receiving a very generous State of Michigan grant, and unfortunately a new governor and a new administration severed that grant. It was pretty substantial. And then third, we had scheduled a spring season announcement concert, and our performer let us know just at the beginning, the same week, that these things are happening, let us know that he was not going to be performing. So this was supposed to be a moneymaker for us. So I headed into my first year with just a gut clench thinking, how are we going to do this? It's not going to die on my hands. I want this to go forward. It's such a great event. And we had all sorts of people rally around us. To take it even further, that summer we had, I think, the coldest summer ever. It was so cold we had bagpipers, walking up the ramp to get to top of the park. It was so cold we even had them thinking about whether or not, and these are hardy, bagpipe players. It was too cold. Nobody was coming. Nobody was supporting Top of the Park. So it was like one thing after another, the perfect storm, as it were. But even as that happened, let me give you an example of what happened next. One of our local coffee shops, whom I'll leave nameless unless you'd like to know, called me up and he said, I can't do much, but how about I provide the coffee for you at Top of the Park? And he came that next night and he saw what we had produced and he said, your people are making this coffee awful. So how about I send my people up there to make the coffee for you? Well, it was a small gesture, but an important one. Donors reached deep into their pocket. They made sure that we knew that they were there for us because everything was hitting us all at the same time. The rallying around this event made me, you know, redoubled my sense of gratitude about this community because this was important to people and people stood to the plate. And in whatever ways possible, they made sure that their donations, their ticket sales, or in the case of the coffee, they really stepped up and said, this is important enough. We're going to find a way to keep it going. And it got us through that toughest first year. The second year was a little easier and the third year was easier still. So it was definitely the work of a lot of community members generously supporting the festival that got us through. It is absolutely an event of the community and by the community and for the community. And I don't know that I truly understood it till we were absolutely pounded, one bad bit of bad news after another. And people stood up and said, it's important. We're going to find a way to make this work. And it was also, I'm sure, wonderful for Mr. Power, who had to that point really been our angel, to know that his legacy was that there were others behind him. And that he wouldn't have to always be there, that in fact we were going to be able to make it on our own. And I'm sure it was heartening for the founders, like Mr. Power, to realize we were going to do it. And we were going to be around for quite a while.
So you mentioned Garrison Keillor. Is there anybody else this year that you are dying to see?
Oh my gosh, there's several. I've got to see Trocadero for my whole life. I've wanted to see these guys. I'm madly, passionately in love. I just can't find someone to go see dance with me. I mean, I'm going to buy up the whole house just to see it myself. I absolutely want to see Snap Judgment. Last year, I think it was The Moth. Oh my God, I was in tears. I don't think I've been as affected by anything. And so to see Snap Judgment, this is going to be absolutely powerful. Pink Martini. Can't miss it. Absolutely can't miss it. And, of course, Capital Steps. I mean, we're just after a presidential year. I mean, what an amazing show. The whole program. I mean, the whole program is just remarkable. Not to mention Top of the Park. Just to come at Top of the Park and to be listening to the concerts and watching the movies. I've got my 3 weeks pretty much planned. It's going to be a great season.
Speaking with Jamie Mystery, mm-hmm. He also mentioned it, that there's a kind of a casual group of former...
Yeah.
Summer festival teammates, employees, volunteers.
I call them alumni.
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 We still get together regularly.
Yeah. These were my colleagues. We worked side by side. And then when Alan left, they became my employees. And in the way that you are bound together when you've been in a college dorm together and you've been through the wars of your finals and midterms together, or people that may have gone to war, you're bound together because you've been through that experience. Well, especially that first tough year, it really bound us together. We are, I think, forever tied together. So we've been meeting about every 6 weeks, every 4 to 6 weeks. We have breakfast. We've been through weddings. We've been through divorces. We've been through children born, children going to college. We've been through, you name it. We're now looking to maybe some of us possibly retiring in a few years. But we've been through a lifetime together, and I'd like to think we'll continue doing it about every 6 weeks, just because we're forever bound by our Ann Arbor Summer Festival experience. Bill Brigard, he's one of our breakfast buddies. So if you haven't had him, I think his stories, particularly going back to the very earliest days with Mr. Power, they were swimming buddies. I don't know if you know about the Flounders. Up on campus, there has, I think, been 40 years of guys swimming naked at lunchtime. It's a water polo group. So here's Bill, who was at that point 20, and Mr. Power, who was 70, swimming naked, playing. And the only rule was, if he's a married guy, you can't hold him underwater for more than 5 minutes. That's the only rule. We're talking broken noses. We're talking smashed, whatever. So the two of them befriend each other through the Flounders. He tells Bill, Mr. Power tells Bill about the summer festival. And that's how Bill came to be doing our posters. He worked with Wop John, Wop John on North Main, for a number of years. Most of the early posters were silkscreened. Then Bill began to get into these collages. And you start to see more of Bill's actual life because he's finding materials. Like one year, it was the wedding, he got married. So the paper from his wedding gifts became the poster. So I think he would be a lovely podcast guest. The pieces of the puzzle, because you see these posters like down at Red Hawk, down in the basement. You follow the whole history of the posters. And Bill, you know, still funny as all get out, but his stories about Mr. Power make it. My only other story, if I was to share one, would be to talk about Tony Bennett. It was when everything changed. I don't know how to say it. He gave the best show I've ever seen in my whole life. I have never had as many people come up afterwards saying that was the show of their lifetime. And from that point on, every one of our shows like hit sold out. I don't know how to say it, but it was like we had a bad moon, and his goodness, he changed our tide. The tide gave, as I said, one of the best, for me, I think the best show I've ever seen. And plus, he's just Mr. Tony Bennett. So he's wandering around Ann Arbor. I heard all these stories from like Steve Bergman and all these other, he's like, is that Tony Bennett? He was in people's, he was in Van Boven's, he was buying shoes, he went to school kids to buy, you know, records. I mean, it was just like one of those people that like brought goodness with him. And from that point on, my last season was just, every show sold out. It was a Tony Bennett, I think it was, he must have a guardian angel with him. Or do the other one, Mel Torme. We're at Power Center and the air conditioning keels out. And it's one of those awful days that you would hate. It's probably 100 degrees and a whole bunch of humidity. And I didn't realize, but the Power Center roof actually opens. And I think most of the stagehands didn't know that either because they'd never had to do it. They open it up, and he came out, and he's schwitzing. And he's like, I know it's hot, but we're going to take it down. We're gonna burn up this town. He did the best show, despite the fact, I mean, there were fans blowing on him. I mean, it couldn't have been worse circumstances. And Mel Torme just did a knock-em-out job. I mean, absolutely knock-em-out job. That's the fun of this, is you get to see those sort of pieces of it. Mm-hmm. And the other part is you look out and you see an audience just filled with smiling people. Oh, my gosh, there's just nothing like it. That's when the magic happens.
Sounds like you have really fond memories.
I really do, and I treasure my time. And I'm very grateful, as I said, I had never directed anything. And if I hadn't, for whatever reason, received that phone call to ask the question, if I had never been given the chance by the board who took a chance on me to become interim director, if they hadn't taken a big chance, I'd never programmed before. And I had to run a, you know, really $1 million operation. They took a chance on me, and I owe it all to the festival.
Music for this episode was Topsy Swing to Bop by George Bedard, off his album Picking Apart the Past, with permission of the artist. AADL Talks to Susan Pauley has been a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.